said Pewter, taking the card back and tucking it in an inside jacket pocket and revealing a range of miniature bottles and jars along the lining as he did so.
"That's just something overcautious legal folk advised to put in after the incident with the werewolf and the piano player. If you ask me, things didn't end as badly for that werewolf as people say."
There was a soft tap at the door, and Angelique slipped in without waiting to be asked.
"Angelique Square," she announced. "I was Dr. Thelomius's personal assistant. I took notes at the prospect. I thought there might be something I could help with."
She took a seat at the desk.
"Perfect timing, Miss Square. We were discussing what exactly brought the Sorcerer General himself to the Last Chance Hotel. I'm sure you're going to tell us that Thelomius himself came all the way out here to meet exceptional candidates, once he was keen to invite into the magical community. Strong signs of magic."
Angelique twirled the long strands of red in her hair around and around her fingers.
"Not particularly."
"Not particularly. I see."
Seth kept his fingers clenched on the arms of the chair, trying not to panic as he waited for someone to tell him whether he was under arrest or not. Four people in the minuscule room meant all of them were practically touching noses, and the heat was soaring now. If he didn't get out of here soon, he felt he was going to faint or start to blurt out the wrong things. He looked up, as a gust of fresh air breathed into the room, carrying with it an aroma of the hotel's signature fishhead soup. Pewter had opened the door, and now he lifted his nose and sniffed.
"What is that delicious smell?"
"That soup, sir," replied Seth,
always more confident talking about anything to do with cooking.
"Soup? Well, I have just been playing the most intense tennis of my life. I don't know about everyone else, but might I suggest we move somewhere a little more roomy? And if possible, our chief murder suspect could make himself useful and lead us to this soup."
Seth went to rise, and gratefully abandoned the stifling room when he felt a hand on his shoulder. He looked up into Pewter's serious face, towering above him.
"Unless you have got something you want to tell me, young Seth."
Seth caught a whiff of clean mintiness as Pewter put his face even closer.
"You're not going to warn me not to eat that soup, are you?"
Pewter said in a low voice.
No, sir. Not at all, sir. The soup is very good, sir. My father's recipe."
"And you are completely sure you didn't poison the soup as well as that apricot dessert?"
Seth swallowed, then shook his head firmly.
"Sir, I didn't poison anything."
As he looked fearfully into the inspector's face, Seth thought he saw wrinkles appearing in the corners of Pewter's eyes, as though his face might be crinkling into the ghost of a mischievous smile. But Seth thought he may have simply imagined it, as he scrambled gratefully out of his seat, relieved to lead the way to the kitchen in search of soup. Chapter 18. Up to his elbows in trouble. In the kitchen, a few moments later, Seth was sliding a bowl in front of Inspector Pewter and stuttering reassuring words about the safety of the soup. He was telling him that the soup had been eaten by many of the guests that evening with no ill effects, when Dunster Dunstable bustled in. He looked directly at Seth with blatant curiosity, and then scuttled over to Angelique and Kingfisher.
"So, what happens now?"
Dunster Dunstable muttered, as he took a pack of cards out of his pocket and started shuffling them.
"I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Dr. Thelomius won't be able to tell us. Did we all pass? Are we in the Elysee? What's going to happen to us?"
He kept sliding glances towards Seth,
who was so used to being either ignored or bossed around. It felt weird to be the centre of attention. He took a seat in the darkest and farthest corner. Angelique rose and looked down her long nose.
"Dr. Tholomyès is dead. Murdered. That is surely all anyone is thinking of right now."
Inspector Pewter went over and gripped Dunster Dunstable's hand warmly.
"The great Gandolfini! Amazing stage illusions! You've been performing since you were 8, I believe. Inspector Pewter, Magicon, you've heard of us, of course.
Now, we have here a devilishly clever crime. No one can see how it was done, so blame has fallen on this roguish kitchen boy. Impossible crime, utterly fascinating locked-room mystery. Seems right up your street.
Bet you have ideas."
Pewter raised one of his silvery eyebrows. Dunster Dunstable looked flattered. Then his expression changed. He placed both his hands on his chest and looked wounded.
"You can't think I had anything to do with it. What reason would I have to kill him? He was just about to finally award me my rightful place in the Elysee."
Angelique's calm voice carried from the back of the kitchen.
"Or maybe not.
Maybe you weren't happy that this is the third time you've auditioned for the prospect.
Maybe you thought he'd reject you again."
"Worried Dr. Tholomyès would see straight through your cheap tricks. Going by the ludicrous name of the great Gandolfini," scoffed Kingfisher. "Nothing but smoke and mirrors. Did you fail again to do any genuine magic?"
"So this is what happens now, is it? We all sit around and accuse each other."
Dunster Dunstable moved towards Kingfisher, his face dropping its grin, but only for a second. Then his mischievous smile was back in its proper place.
"Well, this time my magic was awesome. This time I am bound to be in."
He put his head on one side.
"But perhaps I should just say, do you know what a proper old state papaspook got into when she found out Dr. Tholomyès himself was taking the prospect? Of course, Gloria's grandfather, Wintergreen Troutbean, and Dr. Tholomyès fell out big time. Bad blood with Tholomyès goes back years. And why don't you ask the professor what she thinks of the prospect?"
Kingfisher leapt in.
"Bad blood?"
Seth was listening to everything, but all he could think, with a sinking feeling, was that this was going to keep happening. People were going to talk about things that were way beyond him, things that made no sense about a world of which he knew nothing.
"Didn't you know that the last anyone heard of Wintergreen was that he was one of the missing feared exploded as a result of the unpleasant?"
went on Dorinda, as he spun out of the room with a mischievous grin on his face and left Seth puzzling further. Seth sat in his quiet corner, realizing that he had a desperate need to find out more. Pewter and Kingfisher were talking in low voices, exchanging notes, and Angelique was staring into the far distance, letting her tea go cold. He needed to find out everything he could about the magical world, because his only chance of proving that he was innocent was to find out who had really done it. And to do that, he needed to understand. The only hope he had was to remain as quiet as possible, to keep listening and maybe just see if Angelique would tell him just a little bit more. There was a noise from just outside the room, a laugh that sounded exactly like the bark of a dog. Seth tensed at the sound, which probably meant Tiffany had been delighting in listening to someone else tormenting Seth for a change, and now she was here to stir things up. Seth heard the dread sound of her tiny footsteps as she made her entrance into the kitchen, bestowing one of her dazzling smiles on everyone in turn.
"This tragedy is so shocking," she began in a low, breathy voice. I just wanted you all to know that I would be more than delighted to do whatever I can to help."
Tiffany's white face loomed behind Seth as she inched closer to where he was sitting in his chair. How long had she been lurking? Long enough to have found out that their murdered VIP guest was the most important sorcerer in the land. He couldn't even begin to imagine how Tiffany would react to that news, or what she might do if she found out that all the people staying at the hotel were here to apply to join the magical community. He fervently hoped she was still in the dark about it all, because Tiffany, having the power of magic, was one of the worst things he could possibly imagine. Something so terrifying, worse even than being led away from here in handcuffs. She blinked her blue eyes and went and stood right behind Seth's chair.
"I want to help clear up this terrible crime."
"How kind of you to offer," declared Pewter. "Delightful. Perfect timing to be of help. You are just the person we need to help us clear up a confusion. I am intrigued by this famous dessert that was clearly marked as intended only for Dr. Tholomyus."
"I was asked to do something special just for him," said Seth, nervously, but glad of a chance to explain. "There was something in the other dessert he was allergic to."
"See? He even researched his victim," snapped Kingfisher.
It's important to know things about the guests," stammered Seth.
"And the second Dr. Tholomyus ate this dessert, he dropped down quite dead?" went on Pewter.
Seth nodded.
"Are you going to arrest my little saucepan scrubber?"
Tiffany's beautiful face adopted a mask of concern, but Seth could tell she was gleeful.
"You're really going to take him away? I can't imagine Seth doing anything quite so daring. I mean, so disturbing as murdering someone. Surely he's going back to his bins and his washing up."
Tiffany had moved even closer to Seth's chair now, so that he could almost smell her delight as she leant forward, her breath tickling as she spoke right in his ear. She turned to Pewter and said sweetly,
"So what can I do? There must be something."
"Well, yes. I'm sure it must have been you who created this stunning pavlova I've been hearing about. And the apricot dessert. Your work, I am sure. Not the work of your little saucepan scrubby here."
Tiffany turned around slowly, giving Pewter the full benefit of her hypnotic eyes.
"Oh, I'm afraid all of that was Seth. He is a very slow learner, and more than a little useless, but I have done my best to teach him a thing or two when I can spare the time, and I have had a little success. You may need to press him a little to confess. I'm sure I could help with that, too. In fact, I'd be delighted."
The familiar, terrifying smell of stale rum announced the arrival of Norrie Bunn. Was she here to torment him like her daughter? Was no one going to stand up for Seth and point out that he had no reason to kill Dr. Tholomyus?
"I think you've questioned Seth long enough," said Norrie,
and just for a moment Seth thought he saw a glimmer of salvation.
"He has duties that he's very behind with. Unless you are arresting him and taking him away tonight, I suggest he goes and tidies up the hotel lounge and makes it fit for guests. And stoke up the fire while you are about it, Seth."
Chapter 19. A Genius Inventor. In the lounge, sitting quite alone, huddled in the chair nearest to the fireplace, with only the last red flickering of the dwindling fire for company, sat Count Marid. He looked the picture of misery as Seth slipped in and gathered together the glasses and wiped the low table by the squashy chairs. Count Boldo Marid barely looked up to register his presence
as Seth silently cleared the cocktail bar from when everyone had been in here only a few hours ago, sharing drinks and nervous jokes and playing a jolly game of cards. The Count was still lost in a world of his own as others joined him in the comfortable chairs, and Norrie began to offer drinks from the bar. But when Seth went to stoke the fire, he felt Count Marid's intense scrutiny and was glad when Kingfisher broke the silence that had developed, even though what he said only reminded Seth of the fact that he had a head swimming with questions.
"My background checks mean I can confirm it is true," Kingfisher announced officiously. "Wintergreen Troutbean, Gloria Troutbean's grandfather, is indeed one of the sorcerers officially declared missing feared exploded, following that terrible day that everyone fears even to talk about."
"Ah, yes. Wintergreen was indeed one of the lost of the unpleasant." It was Count Marid who spoke, growling low in his gravelly voice. "That day brought such appalling loss of life among members of our community. A tragedy." Kingfisher carried on reading his notes.
"And Wintergreen was once a close friend of Dr. Tholomyus. They were famous for their magical inventions."
"Such a genius inventor in his younger days, people have forgotten," sighed Count Marid. "But I never heard Torpus speak a bad word against Wintergreen Troutbean. It is true that they fell out, but that was donkeys years ago."
"Ah, well, Dr. Tholomyus probably knew better than anyone how nothing annoys one's enemies quite so much as forgiving them," said Pewter, sinking into a seat alongside him. "Baldo, you are great friends with Dr. Tholomyus. I'm extremely sorry for your loss. You spent the afternoon with him. Did he say anything to you that might help us?"
Baldo shook his head slowly.
"Torpor was right as rain all afternoon. We had tea and then played a jolly game of four-handed brag. Torpor was beating us all, although that was Dunster Dunstable up to his old tricks. Devil with a pack of cards, that boy."
"But Dr. Tholomyus was winning all the money."
Kingfisher frowned.
Marid spread his hands. "Of course. That lad was making sure Dr. Tholomyus won, because it was a clumsy attempt at a bribe. Not that it would have made the slightest bit of difference. Torpor took his duties too seriously. Saving the magical world from dwindling and dying out, that was Torpor. A life spent fighting for magic to be a force for good."
Marid's scarred face crumpled into a picture of misery.
"Can you credit it, Pewter, that our world has grown so fragile that there are actually people out there who do not believe magical people exist? My good friend Tholomyus was determined to change that. There have been some dark times."
Count Marid burst into tears, but carried on bravely.
"But this idea of seeking out those with true magic and inviting them to become apprentices? Genius! And essential to the future health of the world of sorcerers, wasn't it, Pewter?"
"Brave policies," said Pewter.
Marid took the large tartan handkerchief Pewter offered him, and wiped a big tear from the corner of his eye.
"Torpor was not afraid to take them on. Sorcerers were coming around to recognize that his was the way forward."
"Although," interrupted Gregorian Kingfisher smoothly, "people do have a habit of blaming his policies for the uprising that resulted in the unpleasant and the unfortunate ends of those 42 sorcerers now missing feared exploded."
Baldo looked aghast for a moment. Then his face became thoughtful. "You believe the sinister hand of Red Valerian must somehow have reached even into this isolated wood? His forces are growing. I know.
How do we catch that villain?
Kingfisher shook his head.
The killer is among us.
He looked pointedly at Seth. As Seth crouched to put on another log, the flames leapt up, and the dark dome of Count Marid's bald head reflected the glow of the firelight as he wiped away another tear. And a small, treacherous voice whispered what great cover it would be if he had murdered Tholomyès himself. Seth hated himself for even thinking it. Marid was genuinely upset. And what reason would he have? It sounded like Dr. Tholomyès was a wonderful person. Opening up the magical world for apprentices, that sounded beyond wonderful.
Inspector Pewter, the hotel could be full of people who had very good reasons to kill Dr. Tholomyès,
snapped Kingfisher, darting another threatening look at Seth.
But let's not lose sight of the fact that only one could have slipped him the poison, sir.
I guess it just goes to show that at an early stage of the investigation, it's often difficult to know what the right clues are likely to be, replied Pewter thoughtfully.
Seth felt a warm hand on his shoulder. He stared up at Pewter, shrinking at the thought that he was about to be led off to spend an uncomfortable night locked in that broom cupboard.
Noticed you didn't serve up yourself any soup, Seth. Not hungry?
Seth heard his stomach grumble.
I always find I get the best cooperation from employers with tricky deaths on their premises. Otherwise cases can drag on for weeks and be investigated very shoddily. I feel sure Mr. Bunn can spare you a bowl of soup.
Pewter led him back to the silent kitchen, and Seth was shocked afresh to see the state of devastation, and wearily started to tackle a puddle of spilt sauce on the floor and the overflowing bins. Crusted pans were piled high next to the sink, and it was difficult to know even where to start when he found himself being steered to a chair and a bowl put in front of him. Seth took up a spoon and began to eat, uncomfortable under Pewter's intense gaze. Pewter helped himself to more soup and joined Seth at the table.
You were right about this soup. Now, are you going to make a mad dash through this forest in the middle of the night?
Seth shook his head. I'm not going anywhere, except maybe to jail, if Mr. Kingfisher has his way.
Leaving Mr. Kingfisher's wishes aside for the moment, I'm sure you have thoughts about this murder.
Seth swallowed another mouthful of soup. It seemed there was hope that there might be people who had reasons for wanting Dr. Tholomyès dead, and some of them right here in the hotel. Yet it all came back to the fact that no one had a chance to poison the dessert. Seth simply could not puzzle that out. He looked at Pewter and wished he knew what he was thinking. All he could hope was that there was room for doubt that a boy who knew nothing about the magical world was really the most likely suspect for murdering Dr. Tholomyès.
I do have a few questions.
Hit me with one.
There is one odd thing I've been wondering about. I was told to lay a table for 8, yet there were only 7 guests.
Pewter looked at him for so long, Seth thought he'd gone into a trance. Had he said the wrong thing? Eventually Pewter said,
Another guest expected for the prospect? One we don't yet know about? I have to say, I find this case gets more and more intriguing. Now, I have a question for you.
Seth heard himself sigh. He'd know there would be questions. Had Pewter deliberately waited until he was so tired he felt he was bound to easily wrong-foot him?
Would you ever leave?
Leave?
Said Seth, startled by another unexpected turn in the questions. He tried to imagine being anywhere else but here, and failed. Part of him longed to see the world beyond the Last Hope Forest. At least, he thought he did. But it was a vast, unknown place. His insides curled like paper in flame at the thought,
I've no friends, no relations, no money.
And that would take a certain kind of bravery. Would be a whole lot riskier than staying. So, any final thoughts that might shed some light on this tragedy? Said Pewter.
Seth wished he could come up with something, anything that might explain what had happened and didn't point directly to him. I know it looks like an impossible crime, sir, he said falteringly. No one can explain how the poison got into that dessert. I am totally at a loss to understand how it happened. It wasn't me. My only thought is that... Could the murderer... I mean, could someone have used magic somehow to kill Dr. Tholomyès? Otherwise, it really does seem impossible. But it happened.
Pewter looked at him so long, and so steadily, Seth thought he'd gone into a trance again. Seth had the feeling he'd asked a very stupid question.
When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth, said Pewter. Heard that before? Was said by a detective quite possibly even more famous than me.
That was said by Sherlock Holmes, sir, said Seth. But I've never understood. What does it mean exactly?
I think it means that your father must have had a good nose, and that he passed it on to you. I mean, I like to think I have a good nose myself, although not for knowing when a recipe is just right. They say I have a nose for trouble, and for lies and evasions.
That's three things, said Seth.
Ah, yes. But my nose is most famous for being able to detect one important thing. Magic. And if there is one thing my nose is telling me, Seth, it is that you are right. There is magic. Right here in the very heart of this seemingly impossible crime.
Chapter 20. A Search by Torchlight. He was so tired, his bones ached. But Seth could only toss and turn in his narrow bed, unable to sleep. With everything else that had happened, the one thought that kept him awake most of all was not the one he thought he would find himself thinking about. Magic was real. Yet it was a bit like stepping through a door and arriving in an unexpected yet beautiful place, only to be instantly told that here lurked something dark, dangerous, and unknowable. Angelique had scared him with how she'd reacted when he'd mentioned the dark magic of the firefly cage. He fidgeted and earned himself a sharp claw from Nightshade, who was curled as usual at the end of his bed. He tried to lie still. Seth wanted to stroke her soft fur, but he didn't want to wake her. He simply loved the fact that she had decided to reveal to him that she could talk. How lucky was he to have a cat that could talk? Okay, it would have been lovely to have had her to talk things over with during the last couple of years, which had been lonely. But she had always been there for him. And he feared, if he asked her why she'd kept it a secret, she might simply go back to being silent again. She was pretty grumpy. He'd never expected just how grumpy. He should focus on making sense of conversations roaming his head, to try to piece together what possibly could have happened. How had the poison got into that dessert? Pewter was right that it seemed the most impossible, unanswerable question. But it had happened. He had to work it out. How else was he going to clear his name? Who had killed Dr. Tholomyès? Was he anywhere near knowing? That name, Red Valerian, had come quickly to Angelique when he had asked who might want Dr. Tholomyès dead. But it had to be someone inside the hotel. Seth's mind refused to stop racing over everything that had happened, and his departure needed to work out the truth kept him tossing and turning. Dorinda Dunster Dunstable floated into view as effortlessly as a balloon, reaching behind Seth's ear and triumphantly waving aloft the beautiful stemmed dessert bowl. Angelique loomed towards him, the deadly end of her cane pointing directly at his throat. "It's an impossible crime, Seth.
and you are the prime suspect."
Pewter was towering over Seth, more tree-like than ever. He even had branches sprouting out of his head like antlers. And then Seth was peering between bars, trapped in a dark place, imprisoned in a tiny cage, despairing. He felt he had been here his whole life, with no hope of rescue, and as he shook the bars of his prison, something was stabbing his leg and tugging painfully at his hair. Seth blinked open his eyes.
"You were screaming," said Nightshade.
"I was. Sorry, didn't even realize I'd fallen asleep."
Nightshade gave a full stretch and clawed at the scratchy blanket.
"Come on, which of them did it?"
"I don't know. How can I work it out?"
"Come on, Seth. Concentrate. What about the one going around the hotel with the dangerous cane? Don't trust her an inch. Or that small tricksy kid with the pointy ears. He's good at making things appear from nowhere. Or that friend with the scar. I watched him for ages in the lounge, trying to look upset."
"I think he was upset," said Seth. "Count Marid wasn't faking, I'm sure."
But was he really sure? Someone here was lying. Seth chewed everything over.
"They all seem up to no good.
Dunster Dunstable was trying to bribe Dr. Thelomius. Gloria's grandfather is someone who was apparently missing, feared exploded after this terrible event that they call the Unpleasant.
Apparently, Wintergreen Troutbean and Dr. Thelomius were once inventor friends back in the time when Dr. Thelomius created magical science devices. But they fell out. And I could tell instantly Professor Pappasbook hated Dr. Thelomius."
"Have you worked out why?"
"I think it's because there are troubles in the magical world," said Seth thoughtfully. "Angelique mentioned something about reforms. Dr. Thelomius was opening up the magical world, giving new recruits a chance to join."
"Well, that sounds great."
"Yes, that's what I thought. But not everyone is in favor, and it sounds like it led to this great battle, the Unpleasant, where a lot of sorcerers died. No one is even sure who actually did die in it. Angelique said Dr. Thelomius had enemies."
"Sounds grim."
"He brought in these brave policies because there are now so few magical people about that the magical world is in danger of dying out," said Seth, lost in his own thoughts for a moment. "I didn't even know about the magical world a few hours ago. Now it seems terrible to think magical people might become extinct."
"Seth, you're getting distracted again. Okay, what else have you learnt?"
"Basically, that's what everyone is here for. The honor of being officially invited into the Elysee. You can become an apprentice if you can prove you have had some spark of magic. And that's not always found in people from magical families. But I think proving it is difficult." Seth tickled her under the chin.
"But how was he poisoned, Seth?"
"That is a big question. Angelique says I have answers, but she's wrong." Seth tugged at his hair.
"But you must have some idea, Seth."
Nightshade snuggled further into Seth's lap.
"My money is on that Gloria with the sour face. A long-standing grudge between her family and Thelomius sounds a good enough reason to top him."
Nightshade gave a long, slow stretch. "So which of them was it? Tell me, then I can go back to sleep."
He tipped her to the floor.
"Trouble is, I just don't know. Perhaps the answer is staring at us."
"Great to hear it. I try to get under every table to listen, and I've absolutely no idea. Is it that sour-faced girl? She looks the sort who could ruin a perfectly good pudding just by looking at it. And what about that eighth seat at the table?"
Her gaze followed Seth, as he grabbed his torch and jacket.
"Oh, no. Don't tell me it involves heading outside. It's perishing out there. You know what the frost does to my fur. Can't it wait until the sun's up?"
"No, this really can't wait. There really is only one person who could have killed Dr. Thelonious."
"Let's get him. Who is it?"
"Trouble is, Nightshade, what if it actually was me?"
Chapter 21. The Smell of Almonds.
"Whiskers and white mice," growled Nightshade. "Of course it wasn't you. You're off out to find evidence against yourself? What a brilliant idea! Mind if I don't come?"
But she didn't leap back onto her warm patch on the bed, just slunk alongside him as they both made their way down the rickety stairs, pausing on the second-floor landing to listen to Norrie Bunn safely snoring. Nightshade sped ahead, the darkness swallowing her up and not bothering her in the slightest. Seth made sure he avoided treading on the creaky third step from the top and safely reached the ground floor. The hotel was in silence, apart from the ticking of the grandfather clock in the hall, which showed it was already nearly morning.
"The door from the lounge into the gardens opens the quietest," suggested Nightshade. "Everyone's asleep, but I can double-check the coast is clear."
She shot through Seth's legs. 2 seconds later she was back.
"Guess what? Door's already open. And old Bunn's such a stickler for locking everything up at night. We best go careful. There's a murderer on the loose."
"Thanks, Nightshade."
Seth lifted his nose to see if he could detect any clues in the air about who else might be prowling in the night ahead of them. Nightshade plunged on like liquid darkness, and when Seth stepped outside, the light from his torch barely penetrated the inky black. They moved swiftly under the canopy of trees, which blotted out any helpful twinkling of starlight and even the hopeless slip of moon. With just the torchlight, Seth picked his way as they headed in the direction of the glowworm glade. Beyond that was a fierce loop of river that enclosed the grounds of the hotel, guarded by a waterfall which cut off travel to the north.
"I did everything exactly as Kingfisher said," he whispered. "I made that dessert. No one else touched it, and then it was whisked into the dining room, which was locked. No one could have poisoned it."
"So someone used magic to get into the dining room,"
Seth strode on. "I was tired and in a hurry," he said grimly. "I made that dessert. What if I picked something by accident? Something like belladonna, and it got mixed up with the other ingredients. Nightshade, it is possible."
"Possible, but unlikely. Did the poison smell like belladonna?"
Seth thought back to the dining room. "It smelt more like almonds."
"Well, then, that's a big clue. No one knows more than you about ingredients. Now, I bet that smell wasn't in the dessert when you took it into the dining room."
"But I have to be sure," said Seth stubbornly.
"Stop blaming yourself, Seth. It wasn't you."
Guests muttered about the spookiness of the wet, windy woods that grew almost to the door of the hotel. It was easy to imagine faces in the trunks of the trees. You often came across a pair of unseeing eyes or a gaping mouth and realized it was an old statue, overgrown with ivy and spotted with yellow lichen. Seth remembered exactly the steps he'd traced on his quest for apricots. He hadn't known where they grew, yet he'd known for sure they'd be there. It was strange, but the garden was like that. Whatever the season, if you needed a recipe, even one that involved both peaches and pumpkins, you headed into the garden, and you would eventually find what you needed. Sometimes, when he was younger, Seth had convinced himself that the garden was magic. Resentment laced every delicate step that Nightshade took across the frosty ground, moving so it looked as if her paws hardly made contact with the earth. They passed what had once been a great greenhouse, now scarred with jagged windows. Inside grew a giant tree whose branches looked like the clawing fingers of a desperate prisoner reaching through the broken glass to freedom.
"Doing this in the dark wasn't such a bright idea," muttered Nightshade.
"Great. Everyone's a critic," said Seth. "You didn't have to come." She muttered something under her breath. There was only the sound of Seth's feet crunching noisily on the twigs and leaves, the scent of moist earth, and the fresh sharp tang of early icy air filling his nostrils. He stumbled over a tree root, twisting his ankle. He hobbled onwards.
"Come on! Nearly there!"
Nightshade brushed past his legs and leapt forwards into the darkness. Seth took a deep breath. Stumbling forwards, and at last, even in the dark, they were at the place exactly as he remembered. There were the apricots. Nightshade lifted her nose in the night air.
"Get on with it, Seth. We'll get frostbite out here."
"If I made a terrible mistake, I shall own up." Seth gripped the torch firmly. Nightshade looked up at him, her big eyes reflecting the thin moonlight.
"Then I guess we're all doomed."
"Thanks, Nightshade." Seth wondered if he would ever get used to her talking. "You are such a comfort." As he pushed aside the foliage, his heart was hammering as he expected to catch sight of something deadly curling around the fruit, or a lethal dark berry in just the wrong place, waiting to drop him into trouble. The first ghostly light of dawn breaking helped his search, warming to a cheerful flush of pink on the horizon.
"There's nothing, Nightshade," Seth breathed. "Just the apricots."
Seth felt his heart lift.
"Okay. Sound detective work," said Nightshade. "But I knew from the start that dessert simply could not have been poisoned when it left the kitchen."
The relief was so great, it made his steps light as they turned back to the hotel.
"Thanks, Nightshade. You were absolutely right. I know now for sure."
"You sure listened to me, Seth. Don't you remember? You missed the biggest clue. Like every good chef, you tasted that dessert yourself before it went into the dining room."
Seth stopped.
"Oh, so I did."
"If it was poison, Seth, you'd be dead. That proof enough for you? You're still walking about? Gotta get better with your detective work. You can't miss big clues like that," she grouched.
"Well, why didn't you say something before?"
said Seth snappily.
"You were so keen to have a downer on yourself. Thought you needed to get over beating yourself up. Anyway, you done. Now perhaps we can focus on getting on the trail of whoever actually did it. We need to find out who's been using magic.
Let's go.
Let's prove who found a way to get into that dining room."
Chapter 22. Hunting for Birdsong. Nightshade switched the conversation to breakfast. And not just her own breakfast. She was really keen that Seth didn't get into big trouble with the buns for neglecting his duties. She reminded him that once they cleared his name, Seth was still going to have to keep on the buns' good side, if they had one. They bickered cheerfully as they walked back, Nightshade resisting scampering after every low rustle in the leaves that potentially alerted her to a tasty breakfast. They were almost back at the hotel when she lifted her nose and paused. Seth peered cautiously around and saw what Nightshade had seen, a figure in among the bushes. Someone else was up early, someone who was doing something very strange indeed. Seth risked stealing closer, and was rewarded by a small chink of clear brightness in the slate-gray clouds gathered moodily on the horizon, revealing Professor Pappasbook in all her gaudy glory. She was ambling through the rose garden, moving slowly and silently, but with a determined look on her face, as if stalking something, her giant, complicated bird's nest of hair gently bobbing. She was gripping a colossal net on a hoop.
"You think she's doing magic?"
Seth whispered. Nightshade muttered something about being less interested in magic than breakfast, and scampered off in pursuit of some small, unsuspecting woodland creature. An alarmed bird call sounded shrill on the sharp morning air, and Professor Pappusbook lifted her pointed nose and moved swiftly and surely towards the sound. She swiped her net, then opened one of the crystal bottles Seth recognized from the case in her room. She stuffed something inside. As another bird started its song, her head lifted again. The net moved through the air, as she pursued it with a determined look on her beaky features. Seth, in spite of wanting to get back into the hotel and nervous of speaking to anyone, decided he'd try and find out what she was doing.
"Good morning, Professor Pappusbook."
She swung around, almost decapitating Seth with her net, but when she saw who it was, she smiled.
"Wonderful woodland. Nothing but trees for absolutely miles."
She breathed the fresh air deeply through her nostrils. "Most people complain about that, actually."
"Remarkable."
As the pink glow began to lift on the horizon, so the low chatter of birdsong started to grow.
"Would you like to help me to catch some birdsong? If I'm lucky, I'll get a whole dawn chorus." "Marvelous."
"Me?"
asked Seth, astonished.
I'd love to, if you think I could."
"Just step up quickly. Grip right here. Listen and swoop. Swoop."
The net was amazingly light, despite its size. A startled blackbird yelled at him.
"No, not like you're catching tiddlers. Like you're after a massive pike for your supper. Right, there you go. That's it."
Seth did his best. The birds around him seemed to all be shouting at once. It was impossible to tell the cries apart. It was as if someone was conducting an orchestra, and Professor Pappusbook encouraged him to take swoop after swoop. She seized the net from him and pushed her large nose into it.
"I believe you got one."
Seth watched as she poked the end of the net into a bottle.
"Did I really get something?"
"Yes, you got it, Seth."
"Wow,"
he said, remembering how he'd lifted that stopper in her room and that bird cry had flooded out, just from a tiny bottle. Had he really just captured a sound like that?
"Magic is, well, it's awesome."
"I do know my magic is very limited, and of a very rare and particular kind,"
the professor shrugged modestly. "But sadly, some people are quick to dismiss my life's work."
"I think it's brilliant. Is it difficult to know if something is truly magic?"
Kingfisher had sneered at Dunster Dunstable's illusions as not being true magic, and everyone was here going through some sort of test to see if they could prove their magic. She chuckled, making her second chin wobble.
"Well, I can't walk into a room and create a fireball with my bare hands. Not like some people can. I can't even walk into a room and change a chair into a toadstool."
"Can some people really do that?"
asked Seth, wide-eyed.
"Magic tends to come to people differently." "It sounds brilliant for someone like Miss Troutbean to be able to become an apprentice."
Professor Pappusbook's face lost its smile.
"It's a terrible insult."
But it is? Scouring the country? Trying to recruit people with a spark of magic? I thought Dr. Thelomius's idea sounded heroic."
"Heroic?"
Professor Pappusbook's friendly manner completely disappeared. Even the birdsong net drooped.
opening the doors to fraudsters and chancers. Where will it end? And the worst of it is, that's not all he was doing.
Count Marid said he was trying to save the magical world, floundered Seth.
Professor Pappersbook took a step nearer, making her tower of colourful hair nod.
Count Marid was duped.
She was distracted by taking a big swipe as the drumming of a woodpecker resounded, looked in frustration at her net, then poked her beaky nose closer to Seth's face.
He was a terrible man.
What do you mean? She carried on, swishing her net more in anger than an attempt to catch something.
Fair, he called it.
Insulting, I call it. To put my best friend's lovely girl through that, questioning Gloria's magical ability, getting her to prove her rightful place in the Elysee,
it's beyond offensive.
I have a certain reputation in the magical world, and I aim to do everything I can to make sure Gloria gets her rightful place.
Seth began feeling he might have more than a glimmer of understanding. He was thinking he might be beginning to see many reasons why sorcerers might not have taken so kindly to Dr. Thelomius's reforms.
Both you and Count Marid are here to take part in the prospect, because you need to prove you are magic too?
My magic is subtle.
It is difficult for even sorcerers to properly understand, to have to stand up and prove our magic.
Then she let out a curse, and examined the net closely. She bent low to some woody shrubs, where the spider's webs grew in huge numbers, large, dewy, and sticky. She carefully removed one of the webs and attached it to her net, which Seth could now see was made entirely from spider's webs. Then she dived off to stalk in the direction of a spreading oak tree that was beginning to shed its leaves, muttering,
"I am not going to let anyone, least of all that terrible man, interfere with my chance with this dawn chorus. There was a pesky woodpecker got away from me a moment ago, and if only nuthatches could be persuaded to be more talkative."
Then she turned, saw Seth was still following, fascinated, and put something in his hand.
"Think you might want to find a better place for this?"
She closed his fingers over something bumpy and rough. He had hopes it might be a gift of a small capsule of birdsong. He would love that. But as she moved off with her net held high, he scrutinized the object and could see it was an unusual piece of wood. Actually, when he looked at it closely, it wasn't simply a piece of wood, but a large and very intriguing nut, all knobbly, with an interesting grain. You never knew what might be growing out here, but Seth had seen nothing like that before.
Where had it come from?
He plunged on after her.
"It fell on me as I walked outside the lounge doors," she said over her shoulder. "Took me a moment to realize what it actually was. I guess someone," she turned to wink at him, "was trying to dispose of it, but it must have got lodged in the shrubbery."
Seth looked back at the hotel, where a gnarled wisteria clung to the outside. But how had a large nut been in the shrubbery? It hadn't been growing there, surely. Could it have been dropped from one of the windows above? Mr. and Mrs. Bunn and Omri were on the second floor directly above the lounge. Angelique Square and Kingfisher were in rooms below them. Next to those were two empty rooms. He looked again at the nut.
"Don't know how you did it, but well done.
Trust me,"
she winked once more.
"I won't say a word."
She tapped the side of her nose, still chuckling as she moved off to where the birdsong was loudest.
Why had the professor given it to him?
He wished he understood that wink.
Chapter 23. A Glorious Shade of Forget-Me-Nots. Seth looked up, and knew it was about to be that perfect moment when the rose-tinted light of the early dawn broke over the trees.
Soon, the whole sky would momentarily come alive like it was aflame, touched with the most beautiful shade of cerise, like strawberries changing to oranges. Seth loved this time of day in the autumn, when you could breathe the scent of fruit ripening in the air. Just for a few fleeting minutes, if you were lucky enough to catch it, the forest would wake under a cloud of sleepy fog that would gradually lift, exposing millions of leaves in a costume so different from their summer green, it felt like a totally new place. But that was the beauty of the forest. Every single day, he would see something fresh. It would change hour by hour, yet still somehow remain the same. These days, the hotel had become so quiet. The only folk who strayed here were so utterly lost in the Last Hope forest they couldn't believe their luck to stumble upon somewhere they'd get a welcome bed and a late-night cup of cocoa. But Seth loved the forest, had always loved the forest. He loved the fact that once your ears got used to the silence, you started to hear the endless trees whispering, then birdsong tuned in. And finally, you could hear the screech and crackle of wildlife as it scurried about its tooth and claw business, and you realized that most of what was going on out there was savage, if mostly silent. He moved forward slowly. Already underfoot, the ground was beginning to soften with its blanket of leaves, and he bent to collect some mushrooms he spotted that had sprung up there overnight. It was the perfect time for them, and if the hotel had been as quiet as usual, he'd have happily spent the rest of the day foraging and dreaming up different recipes to try in secret. He was just pocketing a good hoard of mushrooms when he made out a shadowy figure bent low next to one of the walls. He and Professor Pappersbook were not the only people up and about early. But why was Dr. Tholomyès's personal assistant out early, and what exactly was she doing? He was determined not to lose the opportunity to find out. From her crouched position, Angelique lifted her cane. Seth thought it was pointing directly at him, and ducked as she released a dramatic sizzling flash of blue. But it was the window that got it. A gentle cascade like a waterfall of bright blue light. Seth flinched, expecting the window to shatter, but the glow just flowed around it, turning the glass a glorious shade of forget-me-nots in the frosty morning air. She wasn't wearing the rustling silk gown of last night, nor the crimson cape. She was wearing a dark suit, a red shirt, and shoes that were little suited to crouching in the mud like she was doing now. She was still holding her cane, and Seth watched her put away a pencil-thin torch into her red handbag. So Angelique had been out here since before it was light. The snap of a twig beneath his foot, as he moved in for a closer look, sounded as loud as a gunshot in the clear, frosty air. But all she did was remove a notebook from the red handbag she was carrying, frown to herself, and jot something down. Seth breathed a sigh of relief, not quite able to believe that he got away with it. As Angelique scribbled more notes, he wondered if he could creep around and get close enough to see what she was writing. "Make a habit of spying on people, do you?" She lifted her sharp, dark eyes, and they bored directly into his. He stammered. "Well, what are you doing?" She tucked away her notebook. "I asked first," she said, managing to look down her tilted nose even as she rose from her crouched position. "Out and about bright and early?" She made it sound like an accusation. "It is the most amazing garden," he gabbled. "Whatever you need, you can somehow find it, which is peculiar because, of course, apples have a different season to strawberries." She flipped the silver top of her cane, and Seth ducked as she sent a light shower of cornflower blue sparkles into the icy morning sky. the sparkles held in the frostbitten air for a blinding second, and moved to wrap themselves around the wall in front of him. Seth watched.